Imagine losing thousands of dollars just because someone didn't say no. That's the crazy world of contract law we're diving into today. We're going to be unpacking a real estate case with twists and turns that'll they'll make you rethink every email signature.
Oh yeah, this is one of those cases that really highlights how even small, seemingly small details can have huge consequences.
Exactly. We're looking at Fried v. Lewis. It's a Missouri court battle over a house sale gone very wrong. And we've got excerpts from the actual case. We've got some legal analysis breaking it down, and even a whole podcast episode dedicated to this very situation.
Yeah, it's fascinating how much attention this case has gotten. It shows how these seemingly simple real estate deals, they can become, just incredibly complex legal
So
battles.
let's break down the story. We have the Prides. They're selling their home, and we've got Mr. Lewis, and he's eager to buy it. He makes a few offers, and they finally land on a price. $55,000. Seems pretty straightforward so far.
Right. Yeah. But here's where things get interesting. The Prides counter Lewis's offer, and there's one change. They put in a new closing date of June 1st. They handwrite it on the document, initial it, but Lewis never does.
And that one unsigned date, that's where everything goes wrong.
That's right. This case really comes down to what is legally binding, not just what people think they agreed to. Missouri uses the mirror image rule for real estate contracts, which means the offer and the acceptance, they've got to match, perfectly. Any change, even to a date, that creates a whole counteroffer.
So the Prides changing the date turned their acceptance into a brand new offer that Lewis never actually said yes to.
Precisely. And to make matters more complicated, Lewis doesn't even say no to the new date. He just doesn't respond. The Prides, well, they assume they have a deal, especially since Lewis doesn't ask for his earnest money back. But as we all know, silence isn't always golden, is it?
Okay, at this point, I think I'd be sending out some strongly worded emails. What happened next?
Well, June 1st rolls around, and Lewis is a no-show. The Prides are, well, left scrambling. They eventually have to sell the house for $40,000, so that's a $15,000 loss.
Ouch. I could definitely see why they would be upset. So naturally, they decide to sue Lewis for breach of contract, thinking that he backed out of a done deal.
And here's where the case takes another turn. The trial court actually sides with the Prides.
Really? Why? I thought we just said Lewis never technically agreed to the new date.
Well, it seems that the trial court, they were swayed by the argument that Lewis's silence, combined with his knowledge of the new closing date. Well, they thought that implied acceptance. They thought he knew about the new date, didn't object, so the court seemed to think, well, that must be enough.
Hold on. I'm starting to get a little confused now. I thought silence didn't equal agreement in real estate. Didn't we just talk about the mirror image rule and how screwed it is?
You are absolutely right. And this is where the Court of Appeals comes in. They overturn the trial court's decision. And this is where things get really interesting for anyone involved in real estate law. Remember, we're dealing with unique property here. Each piece of land is different. There's a lot at stake. So the courts, they really want to see absolute clarity in these contracts.
So the stricter rules are meant to protect both the buyer and the seller from ending up in a contract that they didn't actually fully agree to.
Exactly. Think about it this way. You wouldn't want to end up stuck in a mortgage you never agreed to just because you didn't respond to an email fast enough.
Right.
And that's why the Court of Appeals, they took issue with the trial court's decision. They said just because Lewis knew about the new date doesn't mean that he consented to it legally.
So the appeals court is basically saying, tough luck, Prides. Like, you should have gotten Lewis to sign off on that date change.
Yeah.
Seems a little harsh, doesn't it? I mean, he did know about the new date.
Yeah, I can see why it feels a bit unfair, but imagine the chaos if silence could just equal agreement in real estate. People could, be forced into contracts they never intended to be in just because they missed a phone call or forgot to reply to a letter.
Okay, yeah, that makes sense. So it's less about being unfair to the Prides and more about preventing a real estate free-for-all.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And that's why the Court of Appeals, they brought up this idea of a contract by ambush. Basically, if silence equals agreement, you could trick people into contracts that they never actually agreed to, just because they didn't explicitly object.
So the Court of Appeals, they reversed the lower court's ruling, right?
Yeah.
And sided with Lewis.
They did, yeah. They concluded that there was never a contract because Lewis never specifically expressly accepted the Pride's counteroffer with that new closing date.
So one unsigned date change cost the Prides $15,000. That's a huge reminder that dotting your I's and crossing your N's isn't just a saying. It's absolutely essential in real estate. This whole case has got me rethinking how I handle contracts.
Yeah, it really shows how important it is to have a solid understanding of these contract law principles, even if you're not a lawyer.
I think a lot of people assume that contract law is just for lawyers, but
right.
This case shows how it can impact anyone, buying or selling property.
Exactly. And there are some really important takeaways from this case that can help people avoid these types of situations. For yeah. example, redlining changes clearly. Every alteration needs to be initialed by both parties, even something small.
It's like creating a map of the agreement. And those initials are the X marking the spot where everyone agrees.
Yeah, that's a perfect analogy. It really emphasizes how important it is to be meticulous and to avoid ambiguity.
Speaking of things that that need to be clear, you mentioned something called a zombie offer earlier. What exactly does that mean?
Ah, yes. The zombie offer. This is a crucial point that that trips a lot of people up. Once a counter offer is made, the original offer is it's basically dead. It's like a zombie. It might look alive, but it has no legal force.
So in this case, once the Prides change the closing date, Lewis's original offer with the May 15th closing, that was off the table, even though he never actually signed anything rejecting it.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why it's so important to be absolutely sure that that you want to make a counteroffer, because you might be, killing off an offer that you could have accepted.
This is making me realize how easy it is to make a mistake with contracts. It seems like there's almost an ethical obligation to confirm that everyone really agrees, before anyone starts packing boxes or scheduling movers.
I completely agree. It's not just about protecting yourself legally. It's about acting in good faith and yeah. making sure everyone is on the same page.
So let's say Lewis had shown up on June 1st, ready to move in. Would that have been enough to count as accepting the new date, even without a signature?
That's a great question, and it brings up a really interesting point. Sometimes actions can speak louder than words. In some cases, performance, actually doing what the contract says, like showing up ready to buy, that can be considered implied acceptance.
Yep.
But there has to be clear evidence that the actions were actually intended to accept the offer.
So if Lewis had shown up with a moving truck and a cashier's check, that might have been enough to prove he accepted the new date.
Yeah, it's possible. But remember, in this case, Lewis didn't do anything. He didn't show up. He didn't communicate. He just remained silent. And that silence, it created too much ambiguity, for the court to say that he actually intended to accept that new closing date.
This case is making me a little paranoid about contracts. What if I miss an email or forget to initial a change? It feels like there's a lot of room for error.
Yeah, that's why it's so important to have systems in place to stay organized and to stay on top of these details. If you're working with a realtor, they can help guide you and make sure that everything is properly documented. And of course, consulting with an attorney can give you peace of mind and help you avoid those costly mistakes.
Yeah, it's a small price to pay to avoid a $15,000 lesson in contract law. So we've talked about the mirror image rule. We've talked about the importance of clear communication and some practical tips for navigating these real estate contracts. But this case also raises some bigger picture questions.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. The Pride v. Lewis case, while it seemed seemingly pretty straightforward on its face, it actually touches on some really fundamental issues about how we balance the need for clear acceptance with the realities of these modern transactions. It makes you wonder, how do these traditional contract principles apply in a world that's increasingly digital?
That's a great point. I mean, we communicate so quickly now, with emails and texts and instant messages flying back and forth. Does all that speed, does it change our expectations about acceptance? Does the law need to adapt to how we do business today?
It's a really interesting question that legal scholars and courts are actually grappling with right now. And there's really no easy answer. On the one hand, we don't want to sacrifice the clarity and the certainty that the mirror image rule provides. It protects people from being bound by these agreements that they didn't you know, genuinely consent to.
But we also don't want the law to be so rigid that it that it can't, you know, can't keep up with how we actually do business, you know, in the 21st century.
Exactly. So the challenge is really finding that balance, maintaining those core principles of contract law, but also recognizing those evolving ways that we communicate and conduct business.
This has been a fascinating discussion. It's amazing how much we can learn from just this one case about the complexities of contracts and the importance of clear communication.
I agree. It really highlights how important it is to be informed and proactive, you know, when you're entering into any agreement.
Yeah, it really is. It's amazing how just one case about a single unsigned date can lead to so many important questions about contracts.
Yeah.
And communication.
Yeah. It's a good reminder that these seemingly basic legal principles they really do have a huge impact on our everyday lives.
So before we wrap things up, let's take a step back and look at the big picture here. What are the most important takeaways that our listeners should remember from Pride v. Lewis?
Well, I think this case is a powerful reminder that, you know, in real estate, the mirror image rule is king. Any change to an offer, no matter how small, creates a counteroffer, and that needs to be explicitly accepted. You can't rely on assumptions or good intentions. It all has to be in writing and clearly agreed upon.
So the lesson here is get it in writing, signed, initialed, and leave no room for doubt.
Exactly. Clarity is crucial when it comes to real estate contracts. And in this case, it shows just how how costly it can be to rely on, you know, informal communication or assumed consent. You know, that one unsigned date change, it costs the Prides $15,000 and months of stress.
Speaking of costly mistakes, we also saw how real estate law with its strict, you know, mirror image rule,
yeah,
is different from other areas of contract law, like commercial law. Why is that?
That's a great question. And it goes back to the unique nature of real estate. Land is considered irreplaceable in the eyes of the law, unlike, you know, movable goods or services. And courts have historically held real estate contracts to a very, very high standard to avoid disputes.
Yeah.
and to protect everyone involved.
So basically the law is saying we're dealing with something big here, something permanent. And we need to make sure that everyone is 100% on the same page.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. And that emphasis on certainty is reflected in that, you know, in that mirror image rule and the requirement for that explicit acceptance.
This case has really been, a masterclass in contract law.
Yeah.
And communication. It's not enough to just, you know, think that someone understands you. You need to make sure that everything is clearly documented and agreed upon.
Absolutely. And that lesson really applies to any type of contract, whether it's, you know, for a business deal, a service agreement, or even a personal loan. Clear communication and mutual understanding. Those are essential for any successful agreement.
Well said. As we wrap up our deep dive into Pride v. Lewis, what's the final thought you want to leave our listeners with?
Well, I think the most important takeaway is this, you know, contracts, they're more than just words on paper. They represent how we build trust, how we set expectations, and how we manage risk in a complex world. And by, you know, by understanding the basics of contract law and prioritizing clear communication, we can ensure that our agreements they really do serve their purpose to help us, you know, help us cooperate, prevent those misunderstandings and ultimately achieve our goals.
That's a perfect way to end our discussion today. Thanks for joining me on this deep dive.
It's been my pleasure.
And we hope you've enjoyed this journey into the world of, you know, of real estate law, contract principles, and the importance of dotting your I's and crossing your T's. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and as always, thanks for listening.